This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. After the January 6th, 2021 attack on Congress and on U.S. democracy, it came time to choose. When she voted to impeach Donald Trump for inciting the attack, Representative Liz Cheney chose country over party. Soon after, House Republicans chose to punish Cheney, stripping her of her leadership position as conference chairwoman. And yesterday, Wyoming primary voters, Republican primary voters, chose to end Cheney's career in the House. In her concession speech last night, Liz Cheney acknowledged the scale of her loss.
2 years ago, I won this primary with 73% of the vote. I could easily have done the same again. The path was clear. But it would have required that I go along with President Trump's lie about the 2020 election. It would have required that I enable his ongoing efforts to unravel our democratic system and attack the foundations of our republic. That was a path I could not and would not take.
Cheney was defeated in a landslide. Her primary opponent, Harriet Hageman, won more than 66% of the vote to Cheney's 29%. And last night, Cheney stated something that Donald Trump has not and will not ever say. She admitted she lost.
Our republic relies upon the goodwill of all candidates for office to accept honorably the outcome of elections. And tonight, Harriet Hageman has received the most votes in this primary. She won. I called her to concede the race. This primary election is over. But now the real work begins.
Liz Cheney remains resolute in her fealty to conservative Republicanism, and she took pains in her concession speech to declare once again her core principles.
I'm a conservative Republican. I believe deeply in the principles and the ideals on which my party was founded. I love its history, and I love what our party has stood for. But I love my country more.
In fact, when it comes to policy, Liz Cheney was as loyal to the GOP as they come. She voted in line with Trump's position 93% of the time. That's more often than former Representative Mark Meadows, later Trump's chief of staff, and more often than Trump's most attentive allies, Representatives Jim Jordan and Mo Brooks, for example. But policy alignment has become virtually meaningless in Washington. Ever since the 2020 election, when, at the GOP convention, the Republican Party refused to adopt a party platform and instead resolved that, quote, the Republican Party will continue to enthusiastically support Trump's America First agenda, the GOP declared that it chooses to pursue what Donald Trump wants. And Donald Trump did not want Liz Cheney back in the House. And so, in her concession speech in Teton County, Wyoming last night, Cheney said her job now is to stand up for the Constitution.
Today, as we meet here, there are Republican candidates for governor who deny the outcome of the 2020 election and who may refuse to certify future elections if they oppose the results. We have candidates for Secretary of State who may refuse to report the actual results of the popular vote in future elections. And we have candidates for Congress, including here in Wyoming, who refuse to acknowledge that Joe Biden won the 2020 election and suggest that states decertify their results. Our nation is barreling once again towards crisis, lawlessness, and violence. No American should support election deniers for any position of genuine responsibility where their refusal to follow the rule of law will corrupt our future.
Well, also last night in Cheyenne, Wyoming, Harriet Hageman, the newly minted GOP primary winner, put Trumpism at the core of her victory.
Wyoming has spoken on behalf of everyone who is concerned that the game is becoming more and more rigged against them. Yeah. And what Wyoming has shown today is that while it may not be easy, we can dislodge entrenched politicians who believe they've risen above the people they are supposed to represent and serve. Yes, Wyoming has spoken, and we have made it clear that we are taking our country back.
The Wyoming congressional primary is the latest in a string of victories for Trump-endorsed candidates this midterm season. Now the focus shifts to the general election. And usually that shift to a general election is almost like a reset. Candidates now have to sway not only their most loyal party voters, but voters from across the aisle and independents, too. So the question is, how potent will Trumpism be in that general election this November? So in order to begin answering that, we want to spend this hour looking at Ohio. That state's congressional primary happened back in May, so Ohioans already have 3 months of general election campaigning under their belts, which gives the rest of the nation a window into how the rest of this campaign season might play out nationally. So let's go to Columbus, where Haley B. Miller joins us. She covers state government and politics for the USA Today Network Ohio Bureau. It serves the Columbus Dispatch, the Cincinnati Inquirer, the Akron Beacon Journal, and others. Haley, welcome to On Point.
Great to be here.
So about the Ohio Senate primary, we're going to focus on that Senate race. How many Republicans ran in the primary, which happened in May?
There were about seven total, five really, that were the clear front runners.
And when did Donald Trump endorse his preferred candidate?
He waited until pretty much the last minute. The endorsement came around mid-April, which was just a few weeks before the primary.
And was there a clear front runner at the time?
No, not at all. You know, we waited for a long time to see if Trump was going to endorse in this race. And, you know, there was a point where we thought he might not. And without that endorsement, you had a few candidates that were really close at the top of the rung, a lot of folks appealing to certain parts of the base, but really having a hard time carving out a lane all to themselves.
Okay, so Donald Trump endorsed, when he finally did, J.D. Vance. How much of a difference did that make in Vance's candidacy in those last couple of weeks? Because he went on to win the primary.
Yeah, so Vance had started to gain a little bit of momentum, but he still had not, really did not have any sort of decisive lead. There were still a lot of Republicans who were skeptical of him because of comments he made once upon a time that were critical of Trump. So, and really Trump's endorsement, you know, made his campaign. It gave him the momentum that he needed right at the end. And because the field was so crowded, he didn't need a significant majority of the vote, and he didn't get that. He got somewhere around 30%, but it was enough to get him to the finish line, and Trump definitely helped.
Oh, I see. Okay. So was Vance the preferred candidate of the Ohio Republican Party apparatus or leadership?
It's really hard to say. He did have some support, but again, I think without that Trump endorsement, he probably would not have won. There was a former state treasurer, Josh Mandel, who had the most name recognition and was kind of perceived as a front runner for a while. He was leading polls for a while. He really carved out sort of the evangelical base of the Republican Party here. So he had a lot of support. There was State Senator Matt Dolan, who had backing from more establishment folks, people who were kind of the more traditional, less populist Republican. And then Jane Timken, another candidate at the beginning of the race, seemed like she probably had this in the bag. She ran in, she was the former Ohio Republican Party chair, a lot of grassroots help and support, but she got into some trouble with Trump early on that she never really recovered from.
Okay, so Haley, stand by here for just a second because I want to bring another Ohioan into the conversation. Gary Abernathy is with us. He joins us from Cincinnati. He worked in Republican Party politics in Ohio, including for congressmen and senators for years, and now he's a freelance writer and contributing columnist for The Washington Post. Gary, welcome to you.
Good to be here, Meghna. Thanks for having me.
So, keeping our focus on J.D. Vance here for a second, since May, how much have you seen Vance use the central messages of Trumpism and Donald Trump's endorsement in his general election campaigning?
Well, it's not just that we haven't heard him so far do very much of that, as we really haven't heard very much at all from him. Tim Ryan, his Democratic opponent, has been very aggressive on the airwaves. Interesting enough, came out with a first ad, Tim Ryan, the Democrat, talking about how he had voted against Obama and with Trump on trade. And so that was how he kicked off his general election campaign. So J.D. Vance has just maybe, 10 days ago, started running kind of his first introductory ads for the general election, kind of a soft ad focusing on his biography narrated by his wife. And he's been getting some criticism for not being more visible. Now, it's still early, and that's going to change. But that's kind of where things stand right now, Meghna.
Okay, so we're going to talk in more detail about Tim Ryan, the Democratic Senate candidate here, in just a second. But it seems really interesting that those early ads that you're talking about from Ryan are trying to align the Democrat a little bit with Trump. Tell me a bit more, Gary.
Well, no doubt about it. I mean, he's a smart guy. He looks at the election results and he sees that Donald Trump won Ohio two elections in a row by about 8 points, which means he got a lot of Democratic votes to win the state like that. So he's got an eye on that. So he's kind of walking this tightrope, Meghna, where, he wants to appeal to the Democratic base, but he also wants to pick off some Republicans, especially after a divisive primary where a lot of Republicans aren't happy that Trump endorsed Vance.
Okay. So Gary Abernathy and Haley B. Miller, stand by for just a moment. Yesterday was Wyoming's congressional primary, but we're actually looking at Ohio today because they've got several months of general election campaigning under their belts already. And so we want to know what Ohio can tell us about the appeal of Trumpism in November nationwide. More in a moment. This is On Point.
Support for the On Point podcast comes from Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform that lets you find candidates fast. Ditch the busy work and use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/onpoint. That's Indeed.com/onpoint. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty, and today we're taking a close look at the Ohio Senate race between Trump-endorsed Republican candidate J.D. Vance and Democratic candidate, Tim Ryan. And we're looking at this race in particular to understand more about what appeal Trumpism might have in the general election for the midterms in November. I'm joined today by Haley B. Miller. She covers state government and politics for the USA Today Network Ohio Bureau. She's with us from Columbus. And Gary Abernathy joins us as well. Longtime Republican in Ohio, worked on congressional races both in the Senate and House, and now he's a contributing columnist for the Washington Post. And Gary, just briefly before the break, you said that many Ohio Republicans were not happy with Trump's involvement or endorsement in the primary. Can you tell me more about that?
Sure. A few years ago, J.D. Vance was a very big Trump critic, and there were plenty of Twitter evidence to that effect until he deleted it. But of course, people, you can never get rid of old tweets. And so he was a very big Trump critic. And so, he did an about face when he decided to run for the Senate. But there were a lot of candidates in the Republican race, everybody from Jane Timken to, Josh Mandel and others, some that Haley mentioned, who, felt that they had a lot more of a right to that endorsement than J.D. Vance did. So when Trump endorsed Vance, it caused a lot of bad feelings, and some of that still lingers today, I think, and we'll see what kind of an effect that might have on a final result.
Okay. So, Haley, what has your reporting then in the past several months revealed about as Ohio moved from the primary now into general election campaigning? Is there still some kind of, division or bad blood from the primary now?
I think there still is. You know, some of the primary candidates, Mandel, Temkin, you know, they've definitely rallied around Vance. They say it's important to keep the seat red in November. But there are definitely still voters who are unsure of Vance. And he really, you know, as Gary mentioned, he's been quiet on the campaign trail, which is adding another layer to kind of this division and confusion over him. I think there are some folks who don't feel like he's campaigning hard enough. They want to hear more from him. He's gotten a lot of criticism, particularly earlier this summer, from conservative radio hosts who say, we need to hear more from you. Tim Ryan is dominating the airwaves. And, you know, he has, in the past couple weeks, you know, changed. There has been a shift there. We've seen him be a little bit more visible. But I think that combined with sort of the messiness of the primary, you know, I don't know that some of these Trump Republicans vote for Tim Ryan in November, but, you know, whether they sit out, whether they hold their nose and vote for Vance remains to be seen.
Okay. Well, Gary and Haley, as you obviously both well know, I mean, there's no such thing as a stereotypical Ohio Republican. So Trump's endorsement of Vance and the influence or impact of Trumpism in Ohio politics right now is quite a complex thing. In order to understand another Republican's view on it, we reached out to John Bridgeland. He's a longtime Ohio Republican. And on Sunday, he published an op-ed in the Cincinnati Inquirer endorsing Democratic candidate Tim Ryan. And in that op-ed, Bridgeland made the case for Ryan's policies to both Democrats and Republicans. Bridgeland wrote about J.D. Vance quite disparagingly, saying, quote, Vance's campaign has also been anemic, lacking the energy of the U.S. senator he is trying to replace, Rob Portman, who worked hard in every county in Ohio and brought people together instead of tearing them apart.
When I wrote that op-ed, you know, I didn't know quite what to expect. I've gotten hundreds of emails from people in Ohio, including tons of Republicans, saying thank you for reminding us what the Republican Party is about and for our need, you know, first and foremost, to defend our democracy.
Bridgeland is an Ohio native. He served as chief of staff to Ohio Senator Rob Portman when Portman was a member of the House from 1993 to 1998. He also served as director of the White House Domestic Policy Council under President George W. Bush. So Bridgeland told us that with a pedigree like that, you'd think he'd automatically endorse Vance, the Republican candidate.
My dad grew up in poverty in Akron and Belleville, Ohio. The son, only son of a single mom and an alcoholic dad. And he was in northern industrial poverty, not the Appalachian poverty that J.D. Vance writes about in Hillbilly Elegy. But I was really interested in his book. And I read the book, invited him to be a keynote speaker with me at a public media station. He was very smart, very insightful. And I thought, wow, what an extraordinary person.
Bridgeland says his opinion of Vance changed as he watched the current Ohio Senate race unfold. Because back in 2016, J.D. Vance opposed what Donald Trump stood for. He had written a scathing op-ed in The Atlantic on the 4th of July, 2016, where Vance compared Trumpism to the opioid epidemic. Quote, what Trump offers is an easy escape from the pain. To every complex problem, he promises a simple solution, J.D. Vance wrote. He never offers details for how these plans will work, because he can't. Trump's promises are the needle in America's collective vein. But by 2020, J.D. Vance made a complete about-face, and all of a sudden, he publicly embraced Trumpism and embraced Donald Trump's biggest lie of all.
We had a massive effort to shift the election by very powerful people in this country. And I don't care what, you know, whether you say it's rigged, whether you say it's stolen, like, I'll say what I'm going to say about it.
Well, John Bridgeland says,
J.D. knows better. He did a 180 turn of his view simply to win the endorsement and the Republican nomination, which I just thought was not becoming of a state that has had senators like John Glenn and John Sherman and George Voinovich and Mike Dwyer, and people who have always risen at some level above politics for the state and national good. A decade ago, Tim Ryan, a Democratic congressman, reached out to me, a Republican who'd been Bush's director of the Domestic Policy Council, because he saw I was working with Colin Ola Powell, and I were working on the high school dropout problem. And so I thought, here's a man, you know, who reaches across the aisle, cares deeply about children and solving public problems, has announced on the campaign he's not going to engage in the culture wars. And that's exactly the kind of bridge builder that we need. And then I also saw it as a stark contrast to J.D. Vance. The reason we have a republic, not just a democracy, is the founders worried a lot about mob rule and felt that representatives who, you know, it was their job to study and be educated and engaged on public issues, that they would both represent their constituents and also kind of tap the better angels of our nature. And when I think back on the Trump effect and after the January 6th insurrection, if Republican senators had stood up and checked that power and said that a person who incites an insurrection does not agree to the peaceful transfer of power, which is unique in our history, can never hold public office again, we wouldn't be in the circumstance we're in today. We wouldn't have candidates all over the country denying an election because there wouldn't be that narrative in the public domain. I think most Americans want to see people who are trustworthy and honest and who don't change their stripes for simply political advantage. Yes, the primary and the general are different in terms of the populations you're trying to reach. But my experience tells me that the great men and women who have served in the United States Senate ought to be people of extraordinary character, intelligence, and trustworthiness. If J.D. Vance is willing to change his stripes so much from before the election to get the primary, you know, what would he do to remain in power? It's a disturbing question.
That's John Bridgeland, longtime Ohio Republican. He worked for Senator Rob Portman and also in the White House under George W. Bush. He's now founder and CEO of Civic, a social enterprise firm in Washington. Well, I want to bring Jack Beattie into the conversation now. He is On Point's news analyst, and he joins us from Hanover, New Hampshire. Hello there, Jack.
Hello, Meghna.
Okay, so you just heard John Bridgeland express his concerns about J.D. Vance and Trumpism, but you also heard Haley and Gary a little bit earlier talk about how, you know, Democratic candidate Tim Ryan, while he's not going to say he aligns himself with Donald Trump, he gave a nod. He's giving a nod to Trump in at least some of his campaign ads on the Democratic side. What do you make of that?
Well, he's trying to win. And to be associated with the National Democratic Party in Ohio is not a recipe to win. You know, as late as 1996, in counties that were overwhelmingly white and earned slightly less than the national median, in short, in counties common to Ohio, the Democrats and the Republicans pretty much split in that election. Half the counties went for Dole, half for Clinton. In 2016, such counties went 658 for Trump and two counties for Clinton. One poll recently shows only 23% of residents of small town America, rural America, Ohio, think the Democratic Party cares about their community. Now, some Democrats say that's because Democrats have lost the ability to speak mid-American. They're woke. They're full of buzzwords and cant that's popular on the coasts. But beyond the problem of communication, there's the issue of policy. The Democrats under Bill Clinton and less under Barack Obama, but still pursued policies called neoliberalism. Now, neoliberalism means the use of the government to protect capitalism from democracy. In other words, it isn't just laissez-faire. It's actually using the government to ease the rules so that unfettered capitalism can have sway. It's the reverse of the New Deal idea, which was that you should use the government to protect people from the market. Well, this has unleashed, embodied in policies like NAFTA, free trade globalization, relaxing antitrust laws, deregulation, on and on, has essentially unloosed unprecedented economic insecurity in rural and small town America especially. And that is the climate that brought Trump to power and made him so popular in Ohio. And that's what Tim Ryan is running against now. Mm. He's got to be able to say, I'm a different sort of Democrat. I believe in regulation. I don't stand for what the Clinton picture was. That's yesterday. I'm today's Democrat.
Mm. You know, I would add to that, Jack, that the policies that you just talked about under Clinton were, I'd argue, they were originated under Republican leadership in the United States. But the Clinton administration definitely gladly accepted the baton and ran with it. But Haley B. Miller, let me turn back to you and reflect on what Jack is saying. Is part of what Tim Ryan is trying to do in the Ohio general now is reckon with or maybe get over Ohioans' concerns about the Democratic Party's own history in the state?
Absolutely. It's worth noting first that, you know, this shift that we were just alluding to in Ohio, you know, becoming more of a Republican-dominated state, you know, a lot of that happened in Ryan's backyard. It happened around the Youngstown area, the Mahoning Valley. If he would have run for re-election in his congressional district this year, there's a good chance he would lose. And I think he knew that. So he knows firsthand what has driven people to the Republican Party, you know, particularly in these areas. And that's why, you know, he's going to, you know, more rural areas. He's meeting with farmers, you know, he's going to counties that he knows are generally not Democratic friendly. And some of these ads that he's run, you know, he's criticized some Democrats for wanting to defund the police. He is really on the campaign trail staying away from these hot button progressive issues and focusing a lot on the economy and workers.
Mm. Well, Gary Abernathy, this brings up the question to me about whether you think that the Senate seat is actually up for grabs. Because, I mean, when I mentioned earlier that Ohio is a swing state, that was sort of looking at it at the presidential level, right? Because Obama won there twice. And then Trump thereafter won twice. But we've got listeners already who are sending us messages on social media saying, well, they don't think Ohio is even a swing state anymore. What do you think, yeah, Gary?
I talked to a lot of people, a lot of Republicans who do think Ohio has become a solidly red state. I disagree with that. I do think it's still a swing state with the right candidates, and partly for what you said, Magna, I just don't think it changed that much in four elections from Obama to Trump, you know, twice for Obama, then twice for Trump. But I think that the one thing, you know, Tim Ryan, the downside for Tim Ryan is that he's not going to be able to define himself forever and just have that feel to himself. Pretty soon the Republicans and J.D. Vance will start to weigh in defining Tim Ryan for people. And that will include facts like, you know, he has a 100% voting record with Joe Biden. You know, the real race starts in a couple of weeks after Labor Day, and we'll just get deluged with these ads from all sides. But I talked to a longtime Democrat official not too long ago who said, you know, I think Ohio is the same it's always been. Republicans have about a 3-point generic advantage in Ohio. So that's an advantage, but it's hardly an insurmountable advantage. So if you have a good candidate like Tim Ryan, and he is a good candidate, kind of in the brown of a Sherrod, or in the mode, I'm sorry, of a Sherrod Brown, who's been successful in Ohio for three straight elections, he could pull off the upset, but it would be an upset.
It would be. Okay. Well, Gary Abernathy, Haley B. Miller, and Jack Beatty, hang on here for a moment. We'll talk more about what the Ohio Senate race might say about Trumpism and its potency nationwide as the country turns towards the midterm elections this November. More in a moment. This is On Point.
A gruesome scandal at the nation's most prestigious university shines a light on a macabre and lucrative world of buying and selling human remains.
Human body parts taken by a manager at the Harvard Medical School morgue and then sold to customers online.
So my first skull is right there on the top shelf. That's my first and my favorite.
I'm reporter Allie Jarmani, and this story raises some tough questions. How should we treat the dead? And who gets to decide?
There should be some middle ground where we treat deceased tissues differently than we treat old refrigerators.
This is Postmortem, The Stolen Bodies of Harvard, a new season of WBUR's Last Scene. Listen and follow Last Scene wherever you get your podcasts.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty, and today we're taking a close look at the Senate race in Ohio between Republican candidate J.D. Vance and Democratic candidate Tim Ryan. And we're asking what impact or influence Donald Trump and Trumpism might have on that race in the general election, and therefore, is it a window into the impact Trumpism might have nationwide in this midterm election season? I'm joined today by Haley B. Miller. She covers state government and politics for the USA Today Network, Ohio Bureau. She's with us from Columbus. Gary Abernathy joins us as well. He worked in Republican Party politics in Ohio for many years and is a freelance writer and contributing columnist for The Washington Post. He's in Cincinnati. And in Hanover, New Hampshire, Jack Beatty, On Point's news analyst, joins us. Now, let's listen just for a moment, again, to refresh our memories about what Donald Trump actually said in the primaries in Ohio. Because as Haley had mentioned earlier, Trump faced a bit of pushback from Ohio Republicans who did not want him to endorse J.D. Vance because the race was so crowded and that endorsement wasn't forthcoming until late in the race. Remember, May 3rd was primary day in Ohio. So here's Trump on April 23rd at a rally in Delaware, Ohio.
But I have to do what I have to do. We have to pick somebody that can win. And this guy is, he's tough, he's smart, he's a former Marine. He's a Yale-educated lawyer, a great student. You know, went to Yale, got a law degree, he's a great student. He's a fearless MAGA fighter. He fights like crazy, and he loves Ohio, and he's a great Buckeye.
And here's what J.D. Vance said at that same rally in Delaware, Ohio.
I'm here with my family, and I got to tell you, my family, a lot of them were with Donald Trump from the moment that he came down the elevator, and it took me a little bit longer to come along to the president. And I got to say, two reasons why Donald Trump is the best president of my lifetime. The first is all the policies we love, the fact that he fought back against the Chinese for the first time in my life, the fact that he actually cut taxes, the fact that he was the most pro-life president of the past 50 years. But ladies and gentlemen, the thing that Trump revealed more than any policy achievement is that we are living in an incredibly corrupt country.
J.D. Vance on April 23rd in Delaware, Ohio. And just a minor fact check there. Donald Trump in 2016 or for the 2016 race came down an escalator, not an elevator. Now, here is Democratic Congressman Tim Ryan, who's the Democratic Senate candidate now, and he talks quite frequently on Fox News, unlike many other Democrats. But Ryan's doing that selectively to reach a very particular audience in Ohio. And here's what he said on Fox on July 29th about inflation.
people are getting absolutely hammered. I mean, there's no question about it. And so to deny that, I think, is a big mistake. People are getting hammered. We need a tax cut for working people, whether it's the earned income tax cut, a general tax cut for working people and small businesses. It's like, it's stuff is bad. It's real bad for people. And so ignoring that or trying to somehow, you know, sugarcoat it, I think does a disservice to the people who are out there struggling every single day.
Tim Ryan there on Fox News, July 29th. Now, Haley B. Miller, what I want to try and understand from all of you, actually, is Trumpism is a belief about this country that's somewhat miasmic, but it's definitely focused on the idea of life being rigged, about elections being rigged, about the centrality of Donald Trump as a savior for the nation. But when it comes to the issues that people are carrying with them into the voting booth, at this point in time, what are the major issues that Ohioans that you've spoken to are telling you that they are actually probably going to vote on?
I think a lot of people are going to be voting with their pocketbooks this year. Inflation's really bad. You know, the it's improving, but rates are still not what people want to see. And they're still employers trying to find workers and that kind of thing. So I think that's going to be a big part of this. At the same time, on the Democratic side of things in Ohio, I think there's a real possibility that abortion is going to energize a lot of voters, which is not directly related to the Senate race to an extent. That's more of a referendum on our state officials, but Ohio is a very restrictive state when it comes to abortion access in the wake of Roe v. Wade being overturned. And so I think Democrats, there's a possibility they're going to be energized by that. You know, which one is more of a motivating factor? I think we'll just have to see how that plays out in November. But those seem to be the major two issues that I'm hearing right now.
Okay, so then Gary and Jack, and Gary, I'll start with you. The economy, always. Abortion, possibly. I mean, so then are we putting too much focus on the spectral influence of Trumpism here? Is it really going to be more those down-to-earth, everyday life significant issues that will drive voters, Gary?
Well, in an ideal, if you were giving the Republican Party political advice, you would say, from now till November, talk about nothing but inflation. Do nothing on anything except inflation. Don't worry at the state level about passing laws on abortion or keep Senator Ron Johnson from talking about how Medicare and Social Security should probably be reviewed every year. These things all distract from what the focus should be as long as it's high, which is the inflation, because that's what people will vote on. Now, will the Republican Party have the discipline to do that? More importantly, Meghna, will Donald Trump allow them to have that discipline? If there's one thing even I think his supporters would agree about Trump, the word discipline is not often used with him. So I don't think we're going to have that kind of message discipline that they should have. And so it will allow Democrats to be in this race across the country, not just in Ohio, probably much more than they otherwise would be.
Okay. So Jack, I think Gary brings up a really important point here, because just to echo, to dovetail with what Gary says, Donald Trump, every time he opens his mouth, he can't not talk about the 2020 election, right? And his still just untrue statements about the fact that the election, not the fact, his belief that the election was stolen. And more importantly, again, will the Republican Party, that has aligned itself so strictly behind Trump, be able to overcome that focus on a past election and instead on focus more on those pocketbook issues, Jack? I mean, this is the current legacy, if I can put it that way, of the Republican Party. You had talked about the Democrats' legacy that Ryan has to overcome. Well, what about what the Republican Party is right now that J.D. Vance may have to overcome?
Yes, Trump's monomania may doom J.D. Vance. He may be people were warning about this early on in the primaries, that Trumpist candidates could win in primaries, but would be disfavored in November. That seems to have happened in Arizona. It might well have happened in Ohio. It's happened elsewhere, where very extreme candidates have hitched their wagon to Trump's, at least then, declining star among Republicans. However, Trump seems to have been able to turn the Mar-a-Lago search, I beg your pardon, raid, into an opportunity to bring back, polls suggest, Republicans who were leaning away from him. Now, whether that'll last, whether that will last in the face of perhaps even a Trump indictment, we don't know. But it has given Trumpism a second in life, if you will. There was a fading, not now. It's all Trump all the time on Fox. And so the monomania may actually help J.D. Vance.
Gary, what do you think about that?
No, I think that's absolutely right. I think Republicans were starting to pull away. I think the raid has brought them back. They've had a circle the wagon type of attitude because, you know, for a lot of Republicans, you have to remember they consider not just the Democrats, but they consider so many in the media to be against them. And so when they see the media pile on Trump and they are going to have a natural knee-jerk reaction to come to his defense. So, you know, it's just ironic. Every time something happens that by all normal standards should hurt Trump, it serves to just make him stronger. It's a bizarre situation. Mm.
Haley, help us understand. I mean, we've kind of been talking about Ohio voters in the abstract here, but help me understand how important are independents in Ohio in a midterm election for Senate? How important are Republican or Democratic voters who may not be those stalwart primary type party voters? Because it seems to me that the conventional wisdom for elections in this day and age is that there is always going to be a significant percentage of voters on the right or the left who you know how they're going to vote. But there are, you know, many more somewhere else on the spectrum who are up for grabs. Now, what's that picture in Ohio?
I think particularly this year, those voters are really going to make this election because you have the, you know, Trump-aligned Republicans who are more than likely going to vote for Vance. Your standard Democrats, you know, maybe even some progressives are going to vote for Ryan. But there's this huge swath of people in the middle, independents, Republicans that are a little bit more establishment, maybe a little bit more moderate, that aren't sold on the type of conservatism that Vance is projecting. And I think that's part of why Ryan is running the campaign that he is because he recognizes that there's just this population of people that, you know, doesn't, maybe they don't feel like they have a candidate right now. And so, you know, I think that influence is going to play a significant role in who Ohio's next senator will be.
Okay. You know, we're headed towards the conclusion of this conversation here, and I want to hear from all of you on the lessons that you think of what's currently playing out and what may play out in Ohio that the rest of us across the nation should draw, what lessons we should draw. Now, Gary Abernathy, first of all, you know, we should say that this Senate race is happening because, in a sense, because Rob Portman is not running again. So, is a lot of what's on the ballot those pocketbook issues, but there's also the question of like what kind of politician do Ohioans want to represent them? Is that a yeah. question on the minds of voters?
I think that's a fair take on it, Magna. I think that, you know, when you look at senators that we've had in Ohio, and I think they were mentioned earlier, Jack mentioned them and some others, that, you know, you look at the Rob Portman, you look at the George Voinoviches, these were people kind of in a statesman attitude, even though, you know, Portman has a pretty strong voting record with Trump, but these are people also who were willing to work across the aisle. And, you know, J.D. Vance is a guy who, you know, certainly to this point has not portrayed himself as someone who's going to be that kind of a senator if he gets elected. Tim Ryan, I don't know. As I mentioned, he's got 100% voting record with Biden. So the thing is this, at the end of the day, Meghna, this Senate race, no matter, people may say, I like Tim Ryan better than J.D. Vance, but this is going to be a nationalized election. So people are going to be told, look, whoever you vote for is going to determine who controls the Senate going forward. And I'm afraid that we're in such a divided, polarized nation. I don't know that senators like Portman and Voinovich and so on have the advantage right now. I think that the more you take sides, the more advantageous that's going to be to you right now.
Okay. So, Jack, what do you think about that? Because this brings what Gary said brings me back to your first comments on the show about, everything in a sense is national. And we can see that right now, Tim Ryan is making some very clear choices about things he's not going to say about the National Democratic Party while he's trying to win Ohio voters.
Yes, but I think maybe a sleeper issue there is abortion. Kansas was a portent, it seems to me. Ohio has an extreme abortion bill, limiting abortion after 6 weeks. We know the flagrant case of the 10-year-old girl who was raped, who had to go to Indiana to get the abortion. The sponsor of the bill in Ohio said of that girl, well, that she should have had the child. That was an opportunity. That child could have, quote, grown up to cure cancer. The Ohio legislature is extremely gerrymandered. It's an extremely right-wing legislature, and it does not appear to represent the interests of the people of the state. In Ohio as a whole, people are more or less pro, quote-unquote, abortion rights, not in the legislature. And I suspect that Tim Ryan is going to hit hard on that discrepancy between the gerrymandered state legislature with the strict anti-abortion law and the generally moderate state as a whole, view as a whole on abortion. I think that could be a sleeper issue.
Okay. Well, Haley, you had mentioned abortion before, so point well taken. But in the last minute that we have, you made the point earlier that Trump's endorsement did help carry J.D. Vance over the line in the primary. And it sounds like from this conversation today that we can also discount the effect that Donald Trump may have in the general election in Ohio because of the sort of like all local politics have become national now. What do you think?
Yeah, I think he's definitely going to have an influence on this race. I definitely think he'll be back in Ohio campaigning for Vance. But unlike the primary, you do have those people in the middle coming to the ballot box. It's not sort of the activist wing of the party like it is in the primary. So for some Ohioans who maybe want to move away from Trump, you know, we'll see if his involvement makes a difference for better or worse.
Well, I have to give Ohio credit for always keeping it interesting. So Haley B. Miller covers state government and politics for the USA Today Network Ohio Bureau with us from Columbus. Haley, thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
And Gary Abernathy, longtime Republican in Ohio, worked for congressmen and senators, now a contributing columnist for The Washington Post with us from Cincinnati. Gary, thank you so very much for being with us.
Thank you, Megan. It's been a pleasure.
And Jack Beatty, On Point News Analyst. Always great to have you, Jack. Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is On Point.